This is Steve Kim. Welcome to the AC Podcast. On this podcast, we want to help you understand and speak the language of our culture and address questions being asked with intellectual honesty, gentleness, and respect. For today's edition of the AC Podcast, I have somebody on the line with me that I've been following for the last little while. I think for those listeners, especially who are a little bit more on the nerdy side, I think you will really appreciate the insights that it brings to this. But before I get to that, I just wanted to let our listeners know, if you are the kind of person who likes to watch TV shows, movies, so on and so forth, and think about them more critically, think about them from your Christian worldview, I just wanted to let you know about this podcast called Media and Apologetics. It's put on by the Veritas Media Canada by Joshua Fast, somebody I met in Victoria last year when Apologetics Canada was there for a conference. Josh and I, we talk through a number of different shows. We talk about The Last Jedi, Next Gen, and The Good Place. If you like Netflix, you probably saw this show called The Good Place. So we go through these shows and movies, and we talk about the different worldview implications, so on and so forth. So make sure you go check that out. You can listen to Media and Apologetics on veritasmediacanada.ca. veritasmediacanada.ca, or you can simply search for Media and Apologetics on iTunes. Now, let's get right to it. Today, with me on the line, all the way from Nebraska, is Tim Stratton. Tim is the Executive Director of Freethinking Ministries. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me here.
Yeah, it took a little while to actually pin him down because he's been just so busy with lots of ministry work that he's been doing, which is a really good sign. And I really do appreciate you taking the time to come on the show. Could you tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself, maybe your upbringing, your educational background? I believe you were at one point a youth pastor as well.
That's right. Yeah, you know, I was raised in a Christian family who took theology seriously and the Bible seriously. I grew up taking that for granted, thinking, well, this must be how all families are. Everybody's raised like this, especially in middle Nebraska, which most people probably were raised going to church, at least in my generation. And so when a lot of people started living a lifestyle that wasn't, you know, how Jesus would teach us and want us to live, I just kind of went with the crowd and thought, well, this is just how it is. Always walking and or wrestling with God for quite a while. You know, after I went to college, 18, 19 years old, God really got my attention. And probably by the time I was 20, I decided I was going to be a Jesus freak. I went to a DC Talk concert and they sang a song called Jesus Freak. And I said, okay, sign me up. I'm not going to be a Christian just on Sundays or Wednesday nights. I'm devoting my life to Jesus Christ. And so, although I grew up, I believe I was saved at a young age, I really started taking Christianity seriously. And I really fell in love with Jesus probably in my late teens or around 20 years old, somewhere around that time frame. And that's eventually what led me to going into youth ministry.
So what was it like going into youth ministry? I mean, I read a little bit what you wrote about your background, and I listened to your podcast a little bit. There was a bit of an aha moment, wasn't there, when you were serving in youth ministry?
Yes.
That eventually kind of led you into apologetics.
Yeah, that's right. I took a job in 2006 at the Kearney Evangelical Free Church, and things were going great for a couple of years. I was teaching the kids with the Bible taught, and you know, I also had a Bible study for young men. And this one young man, he was a freshman when I started there, and he was in my small group Bible study with a few other high school boys, and things were going great, you know, or so I thought. I took a few weeks off over one summer 2008, to enjoy the summer vacation with my family. And we were getting ready to kick the new school year and the new youth group year off with a big party. I brought in a Christian rock band from the area. And I remember doing sound checks with this band. And I remember getting feeling this tapping on my shoulder, and I turn around, and it's this young man who's now about to be a junior. And I remember he seemed kind of shaken, a little nervous. But he said, "Tim, I just want to come here and tell you face to face, I'm not coming back to youth group this year, and I'm not coming back to our Bible study either." And I'm like, "Well, what are you talking about? Are you going to a different church or something?" You know, which is you don't want somebody, you don't want one of your kids to do that, you know. But I found out it was worse. He goes, "No, I'm not going anywhere, because over the summer I became an atheist." And I thought, wow, I'm never taking a few weeks of vacation off again. You know, I mean, but because no, over the summer I became an atheist. I've been reading Stephen Hawking, Sam Harris, Richard Dawkins, Christopher Hitchens, you know, fill in the blank with your favorite atheist. Mm-hmm. He's been reading them and watching the videos. And he told me, "I'm just convinced that atheism is true." And I said, "But you know that's not true." And he goes, "No, I don't know that, Tim." And I thought, well, if I yelled it a little louder, I'm like, "But you know that's not true." And he's like, I mean, here's a 16-year-old kid. He said, "Tim, don't put words in my mouth. I don't know that that's not true." He goes, "What I know is true is that God does not exist and that your Bible is a bunch of fairy tales."
Ouch.
Yeah, yeah. And then he told me, "And this is why I think it." One of the things he said is, "Tim, if you can answer one of these objections, I'll stick around." I'm like, "Okay, I got a shot." And, you know, I don't know for sure. I always say he probably gave me a dozen from which to choose, and I could not answer any of them. And I remember him looking at me, this look that he gave me, just I'll never forget. It was like a look of disgust, and almost like I let him down. And even tears were in his eyes. I just remember watching him walk out of those doors. And that shook me. I obviously didn't enjoy the rest of the night, the back to school bash. And what's really cool is this kid, he was a son of one of the elders of the church. You know, he was raised in the church in a godly family. And I went home that night after the bash, and with my shaken faith, I got on my knees. I remember praying. I had watched the movie, The Patriot, probably not a long time before that. And the words of the pastor in the movie, he says something like, "Sometimes you got to defend the sheep." Just these words came to mind, like, if I'm going to be a shepherd, I need to learn how to defend the sheep. And I realized that the sheep were being attacked with these atheistic ideas. So I wanted to find answers for myself, number one, and also for these students, these sheep that were in my care. And so, but the problem was, I always considered myself to be the stupid kid. Even in high school on the basketball team, I was always in danger of being kicked off or suspended from the team because my grades were the worst on the whole team. You know, so I always went through life up to that point considering myself to be the stupid kid. So when this young man is giving me all these intellectual, academic, and seemingly scholarly objections and raising these academic questions, you know, I felt like, man, God, if you're calling me to defend the sheep in this manner, you've got the wrong guy. I can't do this. I can't interact with these philosophers and these physicists and things like that. Again, I remember this sense of, you know, I'm not saying that I heard any audible voice, but man, you feel this impression on you somehow. I can't explain it. I just felt like God was saying, "Hey, just take baby steps, you know, and ask for wisdom. I'll give it to you, but you got to put in the work." You know, this is what's going on in this wrestling process. And so eventually enrolled in the apologetics program at Biola while I was continuing to be a youth pastor. So I was able to do that online.
Yeah, I saw in your profile that you actually graduated in 2014.
That's right.
And I started the same online program in 2013. And it sounds like we just kind of did one of these passing ships in the night kind of thing. We just missed each other.
Well, that's cool. At least we were both at Biola at the same time. We can say we were, you know.
Yeah.
When did you graduate?
2015.
Graduated right after me. Yeah.
So right after you. Now you gave us a bit of an overview of, you know, your background, you know, how you got into apologetics.
Yeah.
You went through the program at Biola University.
Right. Now,
the first time I actually found out about you and your ministry was when I saw this video on Facebook on your free thinking argument. And it had a very kind of familiar ring to it, because I had read some C.S. Lewis and he brought up the transcendental argument and it sounded very similar. And but the way you presented it really kind of arrested me and I was glued to it.
Wow.
From what I've seen, like, you place a great deal of emphasis on libertarian free will. A lot of ink has been spilled on the issue of free will, whether it's libertarian, compatibilism, and all of these things. So for our listeners who might be kind of dipping their foot in the waters of theology and philosophy, maybe for the first time, could you tell our listeners what free will is? And what's the difference between, say, the libertarian freedom and compatibilist freedom?
Compatibilism entails the thesis that determinism is true. If one says that they're a compatibilist and that they possess compatibilistic free will or compatibilistic freedom, they mean, if they say that that is actually approximating to reality, that determinism is true.
But what then is determinism?
Well, determinism, you know, I clarify it by calling it causal determinism, is when something external to the agent or person, the human, is causally determining everything about the thing you call I. So something else would be causing and determining what you think of and about and how you think of and about it. All of your thoughts, actions, beliefs, and behaviors, everything is causally determined, ultimately by something else, either directly or indirectly. Now, the compatibilist will say, well, I'm still free as long as I act voluntarily. But they're still saying they can only do one thing. Right? There's no other options. There's no ability to do otherwise. And ultimately, your actions and your thoughts are caused by your desires, and your desires are caused by your nature, and your nature, you know, it's ultimately caused and determined by God on a divine view. On a naturalistic view, you know, the laws of nature and the events of nature would causally determine your nature, which, so that would not be up to you. And if all of your thoughts and beliefs are caused and determined by your nature, which is not up to you, then none of your thoughts and beliefs are up to you. So the determinist, whether it be a divine determinist or a atheistic determinist because they affirm naturalism, if they want to still say, hey, well, I'm still free in a compatibilistic sense, you really have to say, okay, well, let's examine this. This means you're still determined and you can't do otherwise. You can't think otherwise. You can't believe otherwise. And none of it is ultimately up to you. It's up to factors out of your control. Now, libertarian freedom is different. Libertarian freedom can be most simply defined as the conjunction of a rejection of compatibilism, along with the claim that humans at least occasionally possess free will. So that is to say that the advocate of libertarian freedom affirms that we possess freedom of moral and rational responsibility. And the freedom necessary for responsible action is not compatible with determinism. Libertarian freedom is an accordion term. It means different things to different people in different circumstances. So when everybody starts talking about these terms, you got to stop them and say, what do you mean by that? And this is even true in regards to libertarian freedom. So as soon as somebody says free will, you got to say, what do you mean by that? Compatibilistic freedom or libertarian freedom? And then when they say libertarian freedom, you got to say, okay, what do you mean by that? Because that can have different meanings. So libertarian freedom sometimes refers to an ability to do or think otherwise. But libertarian freedom sometimes refers to an ability to do or think otherwise, but it always refers to source agency and no external causes.
So source agency means the source of your action is you,
right,
as opposed to something that's outside of you, something external,
yes,
to you.
And it doesn't mean you're not influenced by these things, but oftentimes people confuse and conflate influence with determined. And so we're not saying that you're not influenced by external things, but ultimately, do you have the ability to think, believe, act, or behave a certain way or not? Or is it up to you?
This might be too big of a question to hash out here, but I'm just wondering what might be the difference between you being influenced by something as opposed to you being determined by something.
Let's see. If I get pushed off of a ledge, I will be determined to fall to the ground. I don't have the freedom to float in the air or to fly like a bird, right? So I don't consider that really an influence, but if somebody wants to call it that, fine. But that's the, in a sense, where something caused me to fall to the ground and I didn't have a choice otherwise. But an influence could be an argument, maybe a temptation. Influences in this sense are something that I can choose to consider or I can run from or stay there and think about it, things like that. So do you see the difference in how the word influence could be used?
It sounds like if you're determined, you can't go against it.
Right.
Whatever caused it forms sufficient conditions for something to happen. So that push off the ledge is a sufficient condition for you to fall, which means you have to fall. You can't do anything else.
Right.
Whereas when you're considering an argument, you can choose as you deliberate on it. Is that a fair description?
I think we're going in the right direction here, and I think it is a fair description. But here's the bottom line. I'm going to get back to how I define libertarian freedom. The definition that I typically like to argue for is this. One possesses libertarian freedom if they have the ability to choose between or among a range of alternative options, each of which is consistent or compatible with one's nature. Well, let me say that again. Libertarian freedom is the ability to choose between or among a range of alternative options, each of which is consistent or compatible with one's nature. Now, that's very close to the way the compatibilist understands freedom, except they don't have the range of alternative options, each of which is consistent or compatible with their nature. They'll say that there's only one thing that's compatible with your nature. Now, I think that begs the question, and maybe there's other problems with that, but you know, why can't there be multiple options consistent with our nature at a certain time? But that's the view of libertarian freedom. I'm not arguing, when I argue for libertarian freedom, that you have an ability to do something against your nature. That's the common misconception that I run against all the time. In fact, just last week, from somebody who should know better than you think, they said, no, libertarian freedom mean if you hold to that, you think that you can do something against your nature. I'm like, where are you getting this? That's just not true.
Those that have been listening to this podcast for a while know that I come from Korea and I speak Korean fluently. So right now it's in my nature to be able to speak in either English or Korean. Right now, I'm speaking in English, but I can just as well choose to speak in Korean right now.
Mm-hmm.
So you would say then that my ability to speak in English or in Korean is a range of possible options, each of which is compatible with my nature, and I can actually choose between the two. That would, for you, describe libertarian freedom. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. Let me add one thing. Some compatibilists that I've interacted with would say, well, look, even though you have the freedom to speak two different languages, every choice you make is based on your greatest desire at that time. So just because you're choosing to speak English right now, well, that's really the only thing you could do at this moment, because based on your greatest desire, determined by your nature, which is not up to you, but ultimately God or the initial conditions of the Big Bang, whatever. They'll say you feel like you have the ability to speak either language right now at this moment. But even if you started speaking Korean right now, that would be because at that moment, that's all you could do because you had a greatest desire to do it. I've heard this called Edwardsian compatibilism based off of the teachings of John Edwards before. Now, I'm not going to say that's not ever true. I think a lot of times when I go to the restaurant, when I look at the menu, I have many different things that seem to be within my power to choose. But ultimately, what I choose, I think it's because it turns out to be my greatest desire at that moment. I think that that is sometimes true, but it is incoherent to apply that universally across the board. For example, I was having a debate with an anti-Molinist. Okay, so I'm a Molinist. I think we're going to talk about that later. And this is a guy that's this hardcore Calvinist slash compatibilist. And he said, no, based on John Edwards, we always choose based on our greatest desire at a given moment. And I said, so tell me this. You're telling me that you only and always choose based on your greatest desire at a given moment. And he goes, yes. And I said, so I said, is that why you are a Calvinist instead of a Molinist? He goes, I'm not a Molinist for many reasons. And I said, oh, wait a second. You just told me that you always make choices based on greatest desires. So did you choose to be a Calvinist because it's your greatest desire for Calvinism to be true and Molinism to be false? Or did you choose it based on reasons, which is a different thing? So if somebody says every choice is made based on the greatest desire, then you're in a big trouble. Because you run into a hard rationality problem, similar to what Alan Plantinga has pointed out, that the atheistic naturalist faces, if they're going to affirm naturalism and evolution, that all of their beliefs are not aimed at truth, if that's the case, but rather aimed at survival. And if your choices and beliefs are all aimed at survival and not truth, then you don't stand in a position to know if your beliefs are any good at all. Well, the same is true when it comes to this compatibilistic view. If all of your choices are based on your greatest desires and not at truth, then you don't stand in a position to know if your desires happen to correspond with truth or not. And you can't even evaluate those thoughts and beliefs because even your evaluative thoughts are still going to be based on your greatest desires at that time. So it just causes a big problem. I don't say that compatibilistic freedom is never the case, but I argue that it cannot be applied universally all the time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think that's one key thing that we really need to understand about libertarian freedom is that we're not saying that we exercise libertarian freedom at all times without exception. Because there are certain things that I do just by reflex, right? So if my hand is on the hot stove, it's not like I'm going to sit there and think, should I remove my hand or not? No, I'll just remove my hand out of sheer reflex. But that doesn't mean that I don't have any libertarian freedom with respect to which language I'm going to choose to speak in.
Mm-hmm.
So then I'm just wondering, Tim, why is libertarian freedom so important? I'm thinking of different implications metaphysically and ethically, and I'm sure you're familiar with a lot of them. So can you just tell our listeners why libertarian freedom?
Right. I argue that libertarian freedom is necessary for at least three things that most of us would consider to be quite important. Those three things are morality, rationality, and true love. So let me unpack each one quickly. Regarding morality, it seems that we have libertarian freedom, at least if Christians should think this much, the ability to choose between falling into temptation or taking the way of escape that God promises to provide, at least to Christians in 1 Corinthians 10:13, is an example. Because here, at least Christians possess libertarian freedom to choose between alternatives that are both consistent with their regenerated nature. So even the Calvinist should affirm this, and most do when I have these conversations with them. And typically, I think a lot of Calvinists reject the idea of libertarian freedom because they incorrectly think that we're saying that you have an ability to do something against your nature. That's not what we're saying. Libertarian freedom seems to be something that Paul, the same guy that wrote Romans 9, by the way, but Paul seems to be saying that we have here, at least Christians, you have an ability to fall into temptation and to sin or to take the way of escape promised by God in 1 Corinthians 10:13 and not sin. On top of that, I would say the unregenerate sinner seems to have limited libertarian freedom too to choose between sinful options. That is to say, although they might not be able to choose to love and follow Jesus, right? That would be something against their nature, even on the Reformed view. They can still choose, for example, between robbing the bank, robbing the liquor store, robbing the gas station, or just sitting on the couch and watching a football game and you know, merely fantasizing about committing these different sins. You know, these are all something that would be compatible with the sinner's nature, but that's multiple options, each of which is compatible with their nature. And I think, based on my research, that even Calvin and Luther would agree with that much. Now, contrary to popular and uninformed opinion, these are examples of libertarian freedom. Libertarian freedom is a limited power, and it does not imply or entail the ability to do something that is simply against one's nature. We are discussing the ability to choose between alternatives that are both consistent with one's nature. And when you think about it, that's even the kind of libertarian freedom that God has. God the Father might not have the ability to not love the Holy Spirit and the Son, right? And you could say that with each one of them regarding the others of the Trinity. But that doesn't mean that God does not have libertarian freedom in other aspects. For example, he's got the freedom to choose to create the universe or not to create the universe. He has the freedom to choose to create Steve Kim or not to create Steve Kim. And to say that God does not have that ability to choose not to create Steve Kim is to say that Steve Kim exists necessarily. Right? But I think that's heresy, right? So only God exists necessarily. So, all right, so that's why libertarian freedom is important regarding morality. The next one, as you mentioned, is rationality. You know, I'm basically writing an entire dissertation on this, but here's how we can boil it down to at least start the conversation. And that conversation has started with this question: do you possess the ability to reject incoherent thoughts and beliefs in favor of coherent thoughts and beliefs? Yes or no? Right, let me ask that again. Do you possess the ability to reject incoherent thoughts and beliefs in favor of coherent thoughts and beliefs? Yes or no? Now, if you answer yes, then you simultaneously affirm libertarian freedom, as you affirm your ability to choose between options consistent with your nature. However, if you answer no, then several big problems arise. For example, why trust your answer?
Right, because you were determined to believe that.
Yeah. I mean, if I ask you, do you possess the ability to reject incoherent thoughts and beliefs in favor of coherent thoughts and beliefs, and you say no, well then, how do you know your no answer is coherent? And secondly, why should anybody else listen to your opinions about anything, including those on this topic? You've just admitted that you don't have the ability to reject bad ideas. Any ideas that are in your head that you are affirming, you know, you don't know if they're better than the next guy's, let alone true. And finally, if I ask you that question and I say, is it, you know, answer yes or no? Well, if you answer no, it seems to me that libertarian freedom exists anyway, since you affirmed your ability to reject yes in favor of no, and thus at least tacitly affirmed yes. And it seems almost impossible to escape from. And this is why even the Calvinist, Greg Kochel from Stand to Reason, he says this. He's a Calvinist, but he is not a determinist, and he is not a compatibilist. He might be regarding salvation issues, but just because something is true in one category doesn't mean it automatically applies to all categories. Although Greg Kochel and I might disagree on that specific issue, we do agree on this, that libertarian freedom is necessary for rationality. So Greg Kochel says this in his book, Tactics, on page 128 and 129, I think. He says this, quote, "The problem with determinism is that without freedom, rationality would have no room to operate. Arguments would not matter, since no one would be able to base beliefs on adequate reasons. One could never judge between a good idea and a bad one. One would only hold beliefs because he had been predetermined to do so. Although it is theoretically possible that determinism is true, there is no internal contradiction as far as I can tell. No one could ever know it if it were. Every one of our thoughts, dispositions, and opinions would have been decided for us by factors completely out of our control. Therefore, in practice, arguments for determinism are self-defeating," end quote. And I got to say amen to that. Kochel is exactly right. It's self-defeating to argue for determinism. And as the respected philosopher John Searle has pointed out, who has no theological axe to grind here. I believe he's an atheist. And I think this is pretty powerful coming from an atheist, since most atheists affirm determinism, since they affirm naturalism. John Searle says this, that rationality only makes a difference if irrationality is possible. Rationality only makes a difference if irrationality is possible. And this means that one must possess the ability to choose to be rational or irrational, and that both of these options are a possibility and thus compatible with a rational person's nature. So that would be another example of limited libertarian freedom. So we've got moral issues and rational issues. And finally, true love. I argue that if true love is going to be realized, that libertarian freedom has to be a part of the mix. Now, although I just sang the praises of Greg Kokel a few minutes ago, this is a point in which Greg and I disagree. Now, I love Greg Kokel. We don't agree on everything, but I've got a long response article to Greg regarding the fact that true love requires libertarian freedom. And I've recorded multiple free-thinking podcasts on this topic as well. You can find all these things at freethinkingministries.com. You know, and we could really spend the entire podcast and this interview talking about a specific point. But to make it simple and for the sake of starting the conversation, I would simply point out that it's both intuitively obvious and recognized by the law that love requires libertarian freedom. And, you know, somebody said that nothing makes my blood boil more than when I hear about guys slipping that date rape drug into a woman's drink. Right? I mean, if you want to see me get mad, let's just talk about this. The reason why it makes me so mad is because it takes any of her ability away from her to resist his advances. And I think this is seriously one of the worst crimes a person can commit, you know. I recently heard somebody in the last week or two say that being accused of rape might be the worst crime one could ever be accused of committing. They said it was even worse than being accused of killing another person. And this is because at least there's some times when killing another person might be justifiable, like in self-defense. But it's never justifiable to rape a woman or right. anyone for that matter, right? Rape is never justifiable. Okay, I'm starting to get mad. My blood's starting to boil. All right, here's my point. Our justice system is clear that all a woman must do is say or even imply no or stop to a man's advances. If this minimal resistance is offered and the man continues to advance anyway, then he is ultimately raping her. If her ability to resist is taken away, then it's rape, and this is not an instance of love. So legally, the woman does not have to say yes to the man's advances in an audible voice or anything like that. She does not have to say yes to the man's advances. But if any resistance is offered, even a little bit, then the man must stop. Why is this the law? Because it's intuitively obvious that the libertarian ability to resist or not to resist is minimally required for a true love relationship, and anything less than that is rape and wrong. It's evil. So we've got to have at least limited libertarian freedom in that sense too. So I've given you three reasons why limited libertarian freedom is important, because morality, rationality, and true love are all important.
Hey, Tim, thanks so much for all of that. Obviously, we have lots more to talk about. We haven't even gotten to Molinism yet. But listeners, I think we're going to wrap up here for this week because we're already a little bit over time. And next week, you can come back for the second part of this interview where Tim will lay out his case for Molinism. And especially if you're interested in the question of how to reconcile genuine human freedom with God's sovereignty, I think you will find this a very fascinating part of this conversation here. And so in the meantime, make sure you go to freethinkingministries.com. That's freethinkingministries.com to learn more about Tim and his work there. and go to iTunes and search for his podcast. His podcast is called The Free Thinking Podcast, and make sure the words free and thinking are actually one word. So Free Thinking, one word, podcast. Make sure you check that out. And I will also put up on our show notes his free thinking argument video from YouTube there, so you can go check that out as well. We didn't really get a chance to talk about it in depth today, but if you check out his podcast and if you check out this video that I'm going to put up, you're going to be able to learn more about it. It's a very fascinating argument. It's very intuitive and in a lot of ways easy to understand. So make sure you check that out. You've been listening to another edition of the AC Podcast. We'll come back next week with part two of my interview with Tim Stratton, the executive director of Free Thinking Ministries.